This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. And we are answering your questions. Your questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com. Don't forget that you can also go to our website at drhoffman.com, and you can record a question, which we'll answer live on the air. On the homepage, there's a little rectangular box, and if you click on that box at drhoffman.com, it'll enable you to record a question, which is going to be part and parcel of our next weekly radio program. Okay.
Okay, we've got an email from Cloy. Cloy says, you had a gal who was inquiring about stopping leg cramps. We did a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Of course, the best way is to prevent them in the first place with taking adequate electrolytes. Yes. Thank you, Cloy. One thing that is sure to stop leg cramps that I found is called Old Amish Formula. And this is actually called Old Amish Formula. Says stops leg and foot cramps in about a minute.
Okay.
And it's all natural ingredients.
Uh-huh.
And I took a look at these ingredients, Dr. Hoffman. Get
okay.
A load of this.
Yep.
A carefully balanced mixture of certified organic unfiltered raw apple cider vinegar, juice from the ginger plant, and just the right amount of all natural garlic juice in a special combination so as to achieve almost instant relief from leg, foot, and hand cramps. It's
okay.
Salt and gluten-free.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I don't quite understand why that might work.
Yeah.
Because those individual ingredients are not strongly reputed to reduce cramps.
Yeah.
Apple cider vinegar, ginger plant juice, and garlic juice. I mean, those are maybe nice ingredients. I'm not sure why that would work.
Mm-hmm.
But people seem to like it.
Yeah.
It's sort of anecdotal.
Right. They claim that it works instantly on all manner of cramps at lightning fast speeds. And you just take it as needed and keep it on your nightstand. For those of you suffering with cramps in the middle of the night, a Charlie horse now and then, this might be the thing to take.
Well, let's just throw that in the mix and let's see what listeners have to say about that.
Yeah. So it's called Old Amish Remedy. Or
yeah.
Old Amish Formula. Stop leg and foot cramps in about a minute. Great. Cloy, thank you for letting us know.
But only if you drive a horse and buggy.
Okay.
It doesn't work if you use a
right.
Any kind of mechanical
Yeah, it doesn't
device.
Work on your saddle sores, however.
right. They can use a bicycle or
yeah,
can
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. So, okay. Interesting stuff. Thank you, Cloy. Oh, we have an email here from Julie. Julie is a 45-year-old female who became ill at the beginning of 2017, January of 2017, with shingles. After that, she went back to work and then got pneumonia.
Aye, aye, aye.
Which she caught from her boss, apparently.
That sounds like a real breakdown in her immunity.
Yeah. So what happened was they gave her Levaquin.
Uh-oh.
Soon after, she developed fluoroquinolone toxicity.
Oh, boy.
And her life has not been the same since.
She was floxed.
She was floxed.
Yeah.
Wow. Julie is somebody who was very, very active. She'd kayak. She would be hiking. She'd go chasing after her children. She
What's
can't do that anymore.
What's going on?
So fluoroquinolone toxicity.
Well, she has muscle pains and weakness. And so she had neurological symptoms of that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she still has terrible pain in her hip.
Oh, God.
And she's wondering what else she could do about it.
Is the pain the postherpetic neuralgia, or is the pain from the...
No, the pain is from the toxicity because the shingles was on her head.
Oh, okay.
Around her face and eye, which she took care of.
Well, it's...
There's no sign of arthritis.
It's a tough condition. There's no quick fix for it. People sometimes benefit from glutathione, especially given intravenously. Short of that, you could take N-acetylcysteine and alpha-lipoic acid. It can be, to some extent, I think, prevented with magnesium at the time of taking these medications.
Okay.
It's a, but, you know, I got to say that I've had some luck with treating patients with this. Anybody who, you know, maybe we have some, we have a lot of health practitioners who listen to this, and if they have a surefire formula for addressing people with fluoroquinolone toxicity, please chime in with it.
Please let us know.
We'll broadcast it.
Yes.
I'm just going to be honest. It's a tough. The best prevention, I mean, the best way of addressing it is to avoid the use of these medications whenever possible. Because many people take these medications and they're fine, but when lightning strikes, it is devastating. It might be genetic susceptibility.
Is it normally prescribed for pneumonia? Fluoroquinolone? I mean, does it have to be?
No,
that?
There are many alternatives.
There are many alternatives.
So. And it, well, see, what puzzles me is why, you know, for example, you remember we had a woman with a urinary tract infection.
Yes.
And, you know, so commonly doctors would prescribe Cipro because it's pretty darn effective, but it's a little like, you know, hitting a, you know, killing
that's
a,
another kill, fluoroquinolone.
Killing a fly with a hand grenade. You don't need to do that. So, you know, I just prescribed an older-fashioned medication, amoxicillin, and she called back within a day and said, thank you.
It feels so much better.
It was so much better. So using some of the older, less powerful antibiotics as a first line, that's my approach rather than, you know, I think the other approach is like, let's use the latest, greatest, strongest, most potent thing for
more
whatever
power.
You have. Yeah.
More power.
Yeah. Wipe it out.
Right. Julie, we hope you feel better soon. Wow. Okay. We have a question from Michael. Greetings, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Are there any supplements that could rid the body of heavy metals and or pesticide residues since they seem to be ubiquitous in our environment? I understand that chelation of EDTA could work, but what about
oral? On the heavy metals, not on the pesticides at all.
Okay. But what about oral modalities? We like things like cilantro. There's Metallo Clear is another nice supplement.
It's a product from Metagenics.
From Metagenics.
You can obtain it via Full Script. You know, where you can go to drhoffmanstore.com and there's a login there. You sign up for Full Script, you'll have full access to the products there.
Right, right. So things like that, things like cilantro. You could do a detox a couple of times a year, maybe very helpful.
Sauna
drink
detox.
More. Sauna, yes. Dandelion tea, red clover teas, things to help the liver detoxify as well. N-acetylcysteine to help boost your glutathione. Boost also your vitamin D, because that will also help to boost your glutathione. Stay away from high mercury seafood. Besides amalgam fillings in the mouth, your dental fillings, the second place we get them are seafood like shark, orange roughy, tuna, king mackerel, tilefish. Don't eat those too often.
Right.
I miss a good piece of swordfish, I'll tell you that.
I went to a steak restaurant last night. I was actually with, he's a business associate, but he's become a friend. And he takes us out to dinner from time to time. And, you know, I just grilled so much meat, you know, over the holiday that I just like I couldn't look at another piece of meat. So I ordered a lemon sole, and it was it was like the size of the platter. It was like amazing. So it was a good alternative in a steak restaurant. It was delicious. And that's a, by the way, that's a fish that is relatively low in heavy metals. Although there's, I guess, because it's a it lives near the continental shelf, it's got a little more potential for PCB toxicity. But
there is that when you look at a lot of farm-raised fish.
Oh, this is not farm.
Well.
I guarantee this one farm-raised. So I was going to say that on the subject of heavy metal toxicity, you know, we've long contended that chelation therapy is beneficial for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
And so initially the theory was calcium EDTA binds to calcium and pulls calcium out of the arterial wall. But that's not really how that works. It doesn't really pick up the calcium and pull it away from the wall. And even if it did, that might not be so good because it might undermine the, you know, the stable plaque and send shards.
You don't want to mess with the stable plaque.
Yeah, it's kind of
like that asbestos tile. Leave it alone.
Exactly.
Don't do anything.
So, but it was demonstrably beneficial for people with cardiovascular disease. And so latest is big study, and it's not about chelation. It's about the relationship between heavy metals and cardiovascular disease risk. And for cadmium and lead, and not mercury, but cadmium and lead in particular, which are almost everybody you look at in the West has levels of those.
If you drink from a municipal water system, you're going to have some amount of lead.
I think there may be some Amazon Indian tribes that have yet no contact with Western civilization that may have no lead or no cadmium.
Yeah.
But everybody's got it. The higher it is, the higher your risk is. And so what they're saying is, you know, when we ask somebody about cardiovascular risk, we say, you know, smoking, hypertension, diabetes, overweight, family history, cholesterol, HDL, you know, homocysteine, Lp(a), CRP, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Alphabet soup. But a risk factor is levels of heavy metals. So hence, chelation, pulling that out, may attenuate your risk.
There you go. That's interesting. Another thing is to reduce your exposure.
Yeah.
You know, get a good water filtration system, for one thing. Make sure it's removing the lead from those old pipes in your home or in the building that you're living in, for example. Don't use the
especially
pesticides.
Especially if you're in Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But, you know, the thing about that is people have pointed out, like, why focus on Flint, Michigan? Within your school district, where mostly... were older school districts, especially on the East Coast.
Yeah.
A lot of those places have unacceptable amounts of lead from the water fountains and the water, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's so pervasive. But we micro-focus on these poor people in Flint.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tragedy, but it's the tip of the iceberg of this problem.
It's true. Another place that we may be getting some heavy metal toxicity might be vaccines.
Deliberate.
Yeah.
Well, I think aluminum was included in that.
Yeah.
So lead, cadmium, aluminum.
Aluminum. That's a place to get aluminum.
But not mercury.
Remove the mercury.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mercury's got other problems, neurological problems, not so much heart problems.
Yeah. Cadmium we get from tobacco smoke.
And industrial pollution.
Industrial pollution, yeah. Batteries and things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Michael, thank you for your question. But the MetalloClear I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something I can prescribe to my clients.
So the other thing is there's a medicine called DMSA or Dimersa, which is a prescription item, and we prescribe that. That will also, you know, if you can get your doctor to prescribe that, most doctors will poo-poo that. You know?
So taking a combo of either something like that or something like a MetalloClear, some cilantro, some N-acetylcysteine, it's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Lower your exposure. That may be the most important thing. Thank you, Michael, for your question.
Okay, Layla, at this point, let's pause to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. So here goes.
Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our Q&A with Layla. Layla, what's our next question, please?
Well, this next one may be a topic for a full podcast, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah.
Diane asks, will you please talk about leaky gut? Oh, my.
Yeah, I don't want to
Where
do
should
a,
we start?
I don't want to do a whole podcast on that, but, you know, because I think we have another interesting question coming up.
We do. We do, as a matter of fact. We have...
But we'll talk about it, but
yeah.
Was that the one about detection with the MRA or the CT angiogram?
You want that one. Let's see here.
I kind of do want that one.
Great. That's from Richard.
We'll get to that in a second. Let's talk about leaky gut.
Okay.
So the concept there is, you know, let's boil it down to simple terms, is the gut is ingeniously designed to absorb the good things that you want, like nutrients, and to keep out the bad things.
Yeah.
What are the bad things? Well, there's... undigested food, which can be perceived by the body as antigenic, as something that may be an outside invader, and the immune system mounts a response to that. So you want to break down the nutrients to very tiny, tiny particles that are non-antigenic, and you don't want the larger macromolecules to get absorbed because they potentially can set up an allergic reaction or immune reaction.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Also, there are bacterial toxins, what are called endotoxins. You don't want to absorb them to a great extent. So the gut, in a healthy situation, absorbs the good stuff, keeps out the bad stuff. When there's some kind of inflammation, distress, gluten will do this to many people.
NSAIDs will do it.
The what are called the tight junctions between the cells in the gastrointestinal tract are no longer tight. They become permeable. It's called altered intestinal permeability.
Yeah.
And you start to get leakage of undesirable elements that get right into the bloodstream. And then your immune system sees them, and they travel to remote parts of the body, and they can set up reactions.
Right, right. So the things that can cause a leaky gut, a poor diet, NSAID use.
Yep.
It could be possibly a round of any other medication, like an antibiotic or something. Stress. Alcohol use, a poor diet, really, sugar and all that, can relax those normally tight junctions and cause a leaky gut that way.
And there's some genetic component to it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are more prone to that. It turns out that relatives of people with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, which is an intestinal permeability alteration, have a little more intestinal permeability alteration. It can be tested for by what's called lactulose mannitol test. You drink this substance and the bad stuff is kept out and the good stuff is absorbed, and the ratio thereof is said to speak to that issue, although it's not a perfect test.
But it's helpful. It's very helpful.
And then patients with autoimmunity, almost all have leaky gut syndrome.
Right. It's like the prerequisite for any kind of autoimmune process.
Patients with HIV have that. Stress can cause leaky gut. It can actually change intestinal permeability. Extreme stress. Extreme athleticism can cause leaky gut. It can
I've read that. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Like ultra endurance.
Candida overgrowth can cause a leaky gut as well. That will do it.
Sure.
If you have an allergy or intolerance to gluten, that will do it as well.
So there's so much to be said about that.
Yeah.
So there you have it. But you know,
so there we've talked about leaky gut, Diane.
But I want to get to that question, interesting question, because why that question is interesting is because this question inadvertently is answered in this week's New England Journal of Medicine. I mean, the person didn't envision this, but there's actually a brand new study just hot off the presses that speaks to precisely this question.
This question from Richard.
Yeah.
Richard says, hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. In a recent newsletter, you mentioned that sometimes you recommend that a patient get a nuclear stress test. How would you relate that test with the cardiac CT angiography particularly using machines with a higher number of detectors, such as 64 or more.
Okay. Well, that's a little getting in the weeds here. But okay. So first of all, a nuclear stress test.
Versus a CCTA.
Okay, so nuclear stress test is when you suspect that there's poor circulation to the heart. And so you stress a person because at rest they may not really have a lot of cardiac demand, but you stress them so that the heart's demanding more oxygen and blood flow. And then you see, if the patient conks out, if they have an abnormal electrocardiogram, which indicates stress, and the nuclear part is, does the heart light up, showing the flow of blood to all parts of the heart? And the problem with that test is that a lot of people who are on their way towards cardiovascular disease seem to have normal circulation until they don't. They have enough flow. It's like saying, you know, that your pipes are a little clogged, but the water's going down and there's no problem. But at a certain point, there's going to be a critical narrowing, and then it'll show up on this nuclear stress test. So the nuclear stress test is less useful to pick up early disease. So the MRA, does a magnetic resonance angiography. What it does is they inject some dye, and then the magnetic resonance will show the flow of blood to different places. But it's not a dynamic test. It's not a stress test. Mm-hmm. It's just a test that looks at narrowing of the arteries. So it's actually sort of a non-invasive cardiac catheterization in some ways. Cardiac catheterization, they also inject dye and then they look to see where the dye goes. Mm-hmm. But the advantage of a cardiac catheterization is that you're already in there and you can put a stent in to fix it. Okay. The MRA is a non-invasive test. The cardiac catheterization is an invasive test. So this thing with the 64 and it just means the number of slices that they do.
Oh,
and the more you slice, the finer the focus of the picture is. It's sort of like the new TV film screens, you know, what do they call pixels? You know,
it's pixels, like, yes.
It's like
the higher the
It's like
pixels.
You got like
1020 pixels,
whatever. You know, like I don't even know the latest.
481.
You got more pixels than it's going to make a difference for you to see. You know, it's like this is a $5,000 TV set. Well, what about my $600 TV set? I can't really tell the difference. You know.
Yeah, really.
But anyway, so that's sort of the idea behind the 64K. Now. The other test that they don't talk about is the CT, is called the EBT heart scan. EBT heart scan only looks for one thing. It looks for calcium. And the calcium begins to form, and calcium is associated with plaque. Mm-hmm. But there's this thing called soft plaque where there's no calcium. So there can be some plaque, usually not obstructive plaque, that's going to make a difference, give you a heart attack.
Okay.
That technically can occur with that test. So it's not a perfect test. And the nice thing about the test is you don't need that much radiation because all you're looking for is the calcium. Calcium lights up beautifully with not much radiation. MRA, there's no radiation. It's a magnetic resonance test, but it's expensive and it's not, you know, widely done. So what's interesting now is New England Journal of Medicine, big article this week, if I can get it up here, says, it's actually interesting. This is called CT angiography, which is not magnetic resonance. It's done it's got x-rays, basically.
Cardiac CT angiography.
Oh, is this what they were talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, they weren't talking about MR. They were talking, so it's the same thing. I'm sorry. But there is this thing called MRA, but this is called CTA. It says, in the study, try to stay with me on this, it's, although coronary computed tomographic angiography, CTA, improves diagnostic certainty in the assessment of patients with stable chest pain, its effect on 5-year clinical outcomes is unknown. So what they did is they looked at patients and they did CTAs and they found that the CTA was very helpful in determining, in predicting the risk of serious heart disease. So there was, using this test, there was a significantly lower rate of death from coronary heart disease or non-fatal heart attack at 5 years than standard care alone. And the good news is, without resulting in a significantly higher rate of coronary angiography or coronary revascularization. In other words, this test in some ways supplanted the need for the invasive tests where they have to go in up through your groin and they have to shoot dye into, directly into the chambers of your heart. So it's a diagnostic tool. And what they found is that they found something called perivascular fat, which is actually something that's kind of hard to see with the EBT heart scan. And they feel that that's a really strong predictor of a dangerous outcome in patients.
Wow.
So anyway, what they're saying here is that this may become an appropriate test.
That's interesting. And hasn't the EBT heart scan now migrated over to an EBT CT type of scan?
Well, I'll tell you why. A lot of hospitals have CAT scanners, and so all they have to do is change the program or change the settings on their CAT scanner, and they can get the coronary calcium.
Ah, okay.
And a lot more. So you see a lot more. They see they see your whole heart and your chest and, every little thing. The problem is you want a dedicated scanner at a lower X-ray intensity to minimize your exposure to X-rays.
Yeah.
Because
it's a lot of radiation.
Yeah, so what'll happen is sometimes I'll say, give a person a prescription for an EBT heart scan. It's not covered by insurance, but it costs like maybe $200-$300 cash on the barrel head. They go to a hospital. The hospital says, we don't do those, but your insurance will pick this up and you only have a small copay. The hospital collects whatever, $1,800 or $2,400. You pay a small copay. You ride your insurance. They give you essentially the same information as you get with that other scan, but you get a bigger dose of radiation and it costs more. But you don't care because it's your riding insurance, but this is what drives up costs. And
that's unfortunate.
So you have to have a separate machine, and these machines now are getting older, that you don't do the volume that's necessary to make it worthwhile on those machines.
Interesting.
So, you got a regular CAT scanner, you can set this CAT scanner to look for coronary calcium, but it's not designed for that purpose. It's not a specifically targeted looking for coronary calcium. It's a general CT scan.
Okay. Richard, we hope that answers your question. That was quite the dissertation. That's good. That's good. That's great.
If you're scratching your head, New England Journal of Medicine, the date of the article is... It's from September 6, 2018. I know I'm running a little long on time, but they actually have an editorial here, which is Imaging Coronary Anatomy and Reducing Myocardial Infarction. And they say the CTA has excellent sensitivity and high specificity. In other words, sensitivity means it picks it up and it doesn't have false positives for the detection of coronary stenoses of 50% or greater. So that's kind of cool. And, it may make it less necessary to undergo invasive angiography.
Right.
But ultimately, some of these people need a stent anyway.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. Richard, thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. That's all the time we have. We appreciate your listenership. Thanks for pushing us over the 6 million download threshold, which we just surpassed last month. And we really find that that's evidence that this is resonating with you. We'll try and keep topics interesting as we go forward in this new season.
Thank you again for listening, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.